Before we started, we hit the record button. You mentioned that you did some paddleboarding last weekend. Is that correct?
Yeah. I had a friend come down to visit from London, and it is tradition that when Andy comes to visit, we go paddleboarding.
Oh, okay.
And we went paddleboarding, but something about this particular event has sparked a problem to be solved mission in my head. You know, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, but there were, you know, when you're going through life and you identify, with a little bit of money thrown at this problem, I reckon we can make the situation next time this occurs greatly improved.
Okay. Keep talking.
Okay. We have inflatable paddleboards.
Okay.
So they are... They're not exactly small when they are deflated, but they are a lot smaller and easier to store when they are deflated and rolled up.
Now, paddleboards come in two flavors, right? Like you can get a pump up paddleboard or an inflatable paddleboard, or you can do a rigid, and
I believe I've only been on a rigid paddleboard once or twice. I believe the experience is quite different, and some people would say maybe better for a rigid board, but inflatable paddleboards do have advantages. They are a lot more forgiving. So if I'm on an inflatable paddleboard and I run across rocks, it doesn't damage the paddleboard.
Right, because it's made of soft, squishy, rubbery stuff instead of...
Yeah, because it's like it's a Lilo that's pumped up to somewhere between 18 and 25 PSI.
Yeah.
But they're also incredibly incredibly durable. Like the brand that we happen to have is called Red Paddle. And on their website, you know, they have videos of tractors driving over the inflated boards.
You said Red Paddle?
Red Paddle,
okay,
yeah.
I'm going to look them up while you talk.
I have no idea if they are, you know, the super duper brand or the brand of the moment or whatever it is, but they just happen to be the brand that we have.
So let's see. Red Paddle. We are digital thinkers bringing business ideas to life. I don't think that's the paddleboard company.
Probably not that Red Paddle.
You have to Google it.
Try Red Paddle SUP. S-U-P.
RedPaddleCo.com. Inflatable stand-up paddleboards.
Okay.
So can you pitch paddle? I've never done paddleboarding before. Can you pitch it to me like I've never even heard of it and sell me on the idea? Can you just sell it to me? Like... Yeah.
I can. have you ever been surfing?
Yes. And I think that's worth talking about for just a second, actually.
Okay.
Because if you say, like, have you ever been surfing? Like, yes. And I'm worried that people might think, oh, wow, Joel's a surfer, you know, and I'm out there like...
Joel's a surfer.
Yeah. And and I am certainly not a surfer. So I grew up on the Oregon coast, and the water there is like 55 degrees year round. Okay, 55 Fahrenheit in Celsius. That's 12.75 Celsius. So it's really cold water. My dad's a physician, and he's also like he enjoys deep sea fishing, and he says you probably have about 30 to 40 minutes in the water unprotected before like your life is in danger. And so it's pretty cold. So when I was in high school, my buddy Josh would convince me like once every 6 months to go surfing with him, and I'd put on my dad's old wetsuit, and it was like a 3/4 wetsuit, which means it came out to just beyond my elbows and down just below my knees. And we could
A shorty.
Shorty, is that what you guys call it?
I think that's what we would refer to in the UK as a shorty.
Okay.
I think.
And it might be the same in the US, but I'm very ignorant of this because I'm in fact not a surfer. So
I'm also quite ignorant.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll enjoy being ignorant together. But anyway, we would go out and we would surf for probably 30 minutes or so before you can't feel your feet, you can't feel your hands, your head is just pounding like I would get a horrible headache. And then we would crawl up on the beach, and even though it was only like 60 degrees outside, like laying in the sand and just recovering was like just the best feeling in the world. Josh would convince me to go do that once every 6 months or so, and I would remember the horror of it and just how terrible it was. And so when I say that I'm a surfer, I say that, yeah, like one time I actually managed to catch a wave, successfully stand up on the board and go, I did, and then fall in the water, and that was it. So
yeah. So like, well, no, it was just that. So like, have you ever been surfing? Yes, I have been surfing. I managed to stand up whilst moving.
Yeah.
And it may or may not have been related to a wave.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm not a surfer, but I have done it a few times, sort of. You know what I actually enjoyed more than actually trying to surf was boogie boarding. You know, like the little boards that you just lay on. There's almost no skill involved. I mean, those are very fun. And I'm looking forward to like taking my kids boogie boarding at some point. It'd be fun to go to California and get some. It's not super warm water down there because it's the same coastline and the water flows from north to south. But I would really like to go do that with the kids. I think they would enjoy that. And I certainly enjoyed that. So anyway,
nice.
So where were we before we got on my ridiculous tangent?
I was about to pitch paddleboarding to you.
Please do that. I want you to do that. So go ahead.
Okay. So Joel, have you ever been surfing before?
Yes, I have been surfing, but I'm not a surfer.
Okay. Well, I have also had a similar experience where I have been surfing, and whilst the idea of, you know, standing up on the board and catching waves is very appealing, the amount of time spent in the water when surfing is not appealing to me.
Yes.
I've also had the, you know, head pounding, that whole experience, not very good. So stand-up paddleboarding, the board is buoyant enough to support your weight whether you are moving or not. So you can be stationary on your stand-up paddleboard and it's stable, and this opens up a whole world of different opportunities. So we go paddleboarding on rivers, and you can go paddleboarding in the ocean, and you can catch waves on paddleboards, but you don't have to, and you have a single paddle and you can sup stand-up paddleboard on completely flat. And in fact, we go paddleboarding on rivers and you don't get wet at all. You might get wet feet, but you don't, it's not guaranteed that you're going to fall in.
So I have a question around the whole getting wet thing. Do you take your, you don't take your phone because your phone's not waterproof.
Well, you can get like bags, you know, like, so we would, if we were going stand up paddleboarding for a day, we would take a dry bag out with us.
Put the car keys in there.
Lunch, phone, car keys would be inside the dry bag. And then you don't even have to wear the dry bag as a backpack. You just strap it to the front of the paddleboard.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the website at redpaddleco.com, who is definitely not the sponsor for this episode. This episode of the Hidden Node podcast is not sponsored by Red Paddle Co.
They would like to sponsor us and give Joel the opportunity to try paddleboarding, we would not say no.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, Red Paddle Co.
There's another double negative.
I know you're listening. Oh, yeah, that was a good one. I know you're listening, so because you're definitely listening to our little podcast with several listeners. We have several listeners now. My wife would like to try it. But yeah, I see that there's like a little bungee strap thing towards the front of the paddle board that you can stick stuff on.
So, I mean, you probably need to come to the UK
again
and visit so you can try paddleboarding.
Yeah, well, hey,
Nick Turner style.
When the rest of the world is willing to accept Americans again, then yeah, sure. But until then, yeah, I think we've done this to ourselves.
Okay.
That's getting too political. But
okay,
like nobody wants us right now.
But go on. You were going to say
no, nothing productive.
I haven't finished the paddleboarding pitch yet.
No, you certainly haven't. I feel like there's way more to talk about there. So please go ahead and continue.
Well, the problem or the opportunity for improvement that I identified on last weekend's paddleboarding adventure was the pumping up of the paddleboards is a huge downer to the inflatable paddleboard experience.
Okay.
Not only because it takes a lot of energy and effort, but it's tough to get the boards, like even with the pumps that we have, it takes a fair while. You have to put a lot of energy and effort into it, and you still don't get up to 25 PSI. Or I have not managed to blow my paddleboard up to 25 PSI regular basis.
Do you use like a pump or are you using your lungs?
Oh, it's a pump.
Okay.
So like, a
25 like a, PSI.
A hand, but a hand pump. So like it, you kind of stand on little like wedgy feet thing, and then you lift the a plunger up and then you push it back down again. And some pumps have dual action mode. So, you know, when it's just volume, then you have it on dual action. So it's blowing air into the paddleboard on the upstroke as well as the downstroke.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you want to get to high pressure mode, then you switch it. And then it's only on the downward stroke that it's pushing air into this thing.
Okay. Okay. So did you say you found like some improvement to this? To the, 'cause that sounds miserable. And that sounds absolutely awful.
I mean, I guess it depends on the scenario, but because there have been very cold days where pumping up the paddleboard has been positive, where that has warmed me up before going paddleboarding.
Right.
But, and this is a horrible realization, but I think I'm quite lazy. And this idea of having to blow the paddleboards up manually every time we use them, I think it reduces my incentive to use the paddleboards.
Okay. Okay.
So I've known that they have existed for a little while, but you can get pumps, electric pumps, to blow these paddleboards up. Some of them use the car, you know, 12 volt. You pull up in the car park, you run the cable from your car to the pump, and then it blows your paddleboard up.
Right, right.
But I've yet to see it in action and be convinced that it can do a, you know, is it man enough for the job?
Man, blowing up a paddleboard manually that sounds like a drag. That does not sound great. Like,
okay,
my wife and I, we stayed with my sister and her husband in Portland a few years ago, and they put us on the air mattress because that was like the guest room.
Yep.
It was basically an air mattress.
Yep.
In the bonus room, and so they had the mattress inflated before we got there, and then we went to sleep and we woke up in the middle of the night and the mattress had completely deflated because I had a leak or something. And so, like, twice throughout the night, we had to blow it up, but we had to just do it with our lungs.
No.
Which is such a horrible, like, worst night. Probably one of the worst nights I've ever had. Some that stupid, dumb air mattress that wouldn't stay. So, okay. I don't see how you would do it any other way than an electric pump. So, one thing that's pretty popular here in Boise is rafting. In fact, if you had been here during the summer, I would have prioritized going rafting. There's a river called the Payette River nearby, and there's a couple different stages that you can do that are varying levels of difficulty. Some people kayak it. A lot of people use inflatable rafts, though. And
okay,
there's a couple at our church that have a raft, and they're really well set up to go rafting, and they do it several times every summer, probably more than several, quite a few times a summer. And they're basically looking for people to fill the boat because they need to have the boat manned with a certain amount of people to make it work.
Right.
And so they'll just like, hey, you want to go rafting? And we'll like say, heck yeah, and we'll go rafting. And it's a lot of fun. It's good. Like, you know, it probably takes 4 or 5 hours to go do the whole thing. But one thing that they do is they have a 12 volt electric pump. They pop the hood on their car. It just connects to the terminals on the battery. And,
yep,
you know, 10 minutes later, the raft is inflated. And I could not, for a raft, I could not see another way to do that. And that seems like it would be a massive convenience for a stand up paddleboard.
Do they have the car running when they do it?
That is a good question. Man, I don't remember. You know, it's, to be honest, it's been a couple of years since we've gone and done it with them.
Okay.
And it hasn't happened this year for obvious reasons. This summer has just been stupid. Nothing fun has happened, basically. But I don't remember.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Okay. So we went, Rosemary and I went for a bike ride a few weeks ago, and we went through a car park, and in the car park were a family blowing up paddleboards with a 12-volt pump.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to stop and be like, so, hey, can you tell me about this? Like, does it work? Is it good? Like,
yeah.
And they said, yeah, it works great. We do this all the time.
Okay.
Now, I don't think they had the engine running at the time, but that is that's the next step in this journey of, okay, great. So electric pumps exist, and can you get ones that have their own battery, or do you have to use the car battery? Because I don't like the idea of running it off of the car battery if I have to have the car running, because that seems horrible to just sit there with the car idling just so that I don't have to pump up my paddleboard.
Yeah, okay, I see where you're coming from, and I commend you for that anti-laziness thing, but I don't see the problem there, because how long is an electric pump going to take to fill up a paddleboard? 3 minutes? 4 minutes? Well,
I think it's that kind of ballpark.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a car idling for six to 8 minutes while you get a couple of paddleboards. I mean, the fuel consumption, especially on a diesel, I know you drive a diesel, or wait, can you say it? Can you say the word so everybody can hear?
What, diesel?
Yeah, there we go. I love that. Just say it again. One more time. Just one more time. Just for me.
Well, I drive a diesel. Oh, in fact, so I have one of the Volkswagen. I have a Volkswagen Passat dieselgate vehicles.
Dieselgate. That's, I love it. Because they got busted for faking their emissions stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, come on, Volkswagen. Anyway, the diesel engines consume a negligible amount of fuel when they're idling. That's like a known thing. Like, I don't know about over there, but here in the US, like truckers, like long distance truckers, I guess what you guys would call lorry, they typically, like if they stop at a rest stop to sleep for the night, they leave it idling all night. They actually just...
No.
Yes, that is a very common practice here. Yes. And I don't particularly that like
just
that.
Just seems outrageously bad.
It does seem very outrageous. What I have been told, and I don't know if this is totally true or not, but I have been told that that diesel engines consume a negligible amount of fuel when they're idling, and they are practically designed to idle continuously. So, oh man,
okay.
I heard a story of a lady, somebody that we kind of know adjacent, kind of a distant, I don't know, distant acquaintance. She met a bunch of other people to go on a little road trip, and they met in a parking lot, and she left her car in the parking lot. And I guess on the way out, she accidentally hit the automatic start on her car, and the car sat in this parking lot, way back of this parking lot where nobody was looking or being around, and it idled for like 3 days. It just sat there and idled.
What?
And consumed an entire, like she got back and like it had almost no fuel left, and it just sat there and idled all weekend. And
it was still idling when she came back.
Yep. And it was just sitting there just idling. And I'm sure she was horrified. I don't know this person well enough to get to talk to her directly to find out, get her reaction of it. But for me, like the extra wear on the engine, the cooling system sitting there, the fan cycling on and off.
But like, I guess, the stupid thing about all of this is like, it's not that outrageous. It's not really that outrageous, is it? It's just like the car was running, but you weren't getting any use from it. Like, my car is running all the time. I'm driving it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, did she put any perceivable amount of wear on the car? No. Did she burn that much fuel? I mean, yeah, a few hundred miles worth of fuel. And so it's cringy. But you know, like me personally, I don't even like sitting in the parking lot with my car running with the air conditioning on.
Yeah.
It feels
wrong.
It does. And that's one thing that I'm really looking forward to with electric cars, is not being concerned about it. At least, well, maybe I will. I won't know until I'm there, I don't think.
There won't be any idling.
No, it won't. But the battery will be getting slowly drained down, you know?
Oh, yeah, but I'm pretty sure. Not that I know that much about electric cars, but I do like Tesla a lot.
Nick, stop it. you are very well researched on this. Come on, you got to give yourself some credit here.
I'm not sure what the difference would be between your electric car is using about the same energy, whether it's in, like, you know, engaged or not.
Think about it like this. Your phone. What is your phone doing right now? Right now, what is your phone doing?
Sending everything I'm saying to you to the NSA.
Okay. Other than that, obviously. All right. Come on.
Sorry, aside from that.
If it is sending everything to the NSA or iCloud or, you know, Google Drive or whatever.
Yeah.
It's slowly consuming its battery right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know about you, but like my laptop, I very much prefer my laptop to be in a plugged in state by default. You know, it bothers me even when my laptop is unplugged for an extended period of time, because the battery does very slowly drain, although Macs are pretty good about not doing that. But like this morning, I plugged in my MacBook. I dropped it back in the dock and plugged it in after several days of actually not having it docked. And the battery was at like 5%. And that bothers me, you know?
Okay.
So
you just said my dock, though, and at risk of spiraling off down a tangent.
Yet again, because we're on a tangent of a tangent from stand-up paddle boards.
Yeah. That's right. And I need to get back to the pump, but the dock, by dock, though, you mean just a Thunderbolt 3 cable that then goes to some sort of other device.
I mean, I wish it was Thunderbolt 3. It's actually a USB-C dock, which is pretty inferior, I'm finding out. But for all intents and purposes, yes.
I'm not going to take the bait. We'll add that to the list and talk about docks that are Thunderbolt 3 versus USB-C.
No, don't take the bait. I did not intend to bait you. No, let's not talk about that. La la la. We're not going to talk about the differences between Thunderbolt 3 and USB-C.
Electric cars discharging while idling. I don't reckon there's an issue there.
Yeah, I agree, because my phone already does that. My iPad already does that. Many of the electronics that I own, I don't like to cycle batteries unnecessarily. Well, now that kind of depends. Okay, now we're getting into batteries. We can't do this. We cannot do this.
Now we're going down the battery.
Okay, let me just sum it up really fast.
Go on then.
I think that a lithium ion battery should be cycled every now and then is a good idea. However, lithium ion batteries will last longer if you don't cycle them. But to me, a battery slowly draining, running an air conditioning compressor and a fan in a cabin while I'm sitting in a parking lot is so much better than an entire internal combustion engine, every cylinder moving up and down in the, you know, every piston moving up and down in each cylinder, every valve opening and closing, in my case, every spark plug. It's just so much happening to keep me slightly cooler than if I had just gone in the store with my wife. Seems so incredibly wasteful. So yes, I am looking forward to electric cars. But to get back to the paddleboarding pump, though.
Yep.
Go ahead. You talk first.
So based on all of that, though, I started diving down the Google and Amazon rabbit hole of, okay, so what are my options? Mm-hmm. And after looking at several options, settled on, okay, there appear to be two appropriate inflators.
Okay.
One of them made by DeWalt, two of them made by a company called Ryobi, and they have various pros and cons. We did eventually find a YouTube video which was very rambling, but did eventually answer all of my questions, which was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. And I've settled on the Ryobi one because it will take a 5 amp hour big chunky drill battery.
Okay. And so the Ryobi has its own battery pack?
It's an entire tool range. So they have batteries. So their particular series is an 18-volt battery pack. And, you know, you can put this battery into things such as a flashlight or this inflator or a lawnmower hedge trimmer.
The Ryobi 1 batteries?
The 1 Plus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, Nick, I feel another tangent coming on, but I can't resist.
Okay,
I want to talk about this. Okay, so I think it's funny that you mention DeWalt specifically and Ryobi specifically.
Okay.
Because here's like, so let's kind of shift a little bit and think about their power tools side of things.
Yep.
The way that I see it, I think that DeWalt is the best thing out there. Like every contractor that I know, every construction worker that I know, every electrician, they buy DeWalt. And it's very expensive, but the quality seems to be just absolutely top notch. The tools seem to last really well. They're great to hold. Mm. Everything seems to work well. Me personally, though, I'm not a contractor. I'm a homeowner. And so I bought into the Ryobi ecosystem a few years ago. Actually, my brother gave me a bunch of Ryobi tools that had the old nickel cadmium or nickel metal hydride batteries.
Okay. And what voltage?
18 volts.
Okay.
And so what got me into the Ryobi ecosystem is I bought a cordless drill and impact driver set that came with the 18 volt lithium ion batteries, fully backwards compatible with the old nickel metal hydride tools and the nickel. I think they're all nickel cadmium, actually. I don't think any of it was nickel metal hydride. Even the charger that came with it would charge the old nickel cadmium batteries. Like, that's the level of backwards compatibility that it provided. And so now I have two chargers. I have three batteries. They're all the... Actually, I have an old nickel cadmium battery somewhere, but it's absolute garbage. It's completely dead at this point.
Uh-huh.
And I have this massive range of tools. And I love that it's one set of batteries. I can use my weed eater, my skill saw, my driver, my new drill, the old drill that I had. There is even the flashlight thing. I never use that. And that's from the old nickel cadmium set. And it's all one set of batteries. I absolutely love that. So when you first started talking, you said DeWalt versus Ryobi. I'm like, dude, DeWalt. Definitely go with the DeWalt. Until you bring up the batteries. That is key.
Okay.
Do you have any other Ryobi tools?
No, I don't. I do have a DeWalt drill, but get this. Get this. And this was a big part of the whole dilemma.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I have an old DeWalt drill, but it's the 12 volt series.
Mm-hmm. No compatibility.
And no compatibility because the inflator made by DeWalt is, of course, their 18 volt series.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I was like digging into this, that I feel like this is very reminiscent of the printer and cartridges 2D printer and cartridge business model of like, we will sell you the products at a very good rate, and then we will gouge you like crazy for the batteries.
Yep.
Because in this scenario, the battery, the 5 amp hour battery, the big chunky one, is £20 more expensive than the inflator.
Yeah. Yep. And on that
but
note,
hey,
yeah.
Go on.
I was just gonna say, on that note, my experience in the past with any kind of power tool batteries is I basically used to hate batteries because it seemed like they all lasted about a year and they were completely done.
Mm.
I've had my Ryobi batteries for 3-4 years now. I keep them in the house year round. So in my Harry Potter closet, you know, we've talked about that. That's where I keep the charger. That's where I keep all the batteries. And so the temperature in there is very stable. It's, you know, just slightly warmer than room temperature all the time in the winter, in the summer. I take them outside. I use them. I bring them back in. I charge them back up and I store them. That's how I do it. Those batteries are, they're hitting 4 years old now. And I have seen absolutely no degradation in storage capacity or performance. Zero. So the one concern that I have about using a battery when you go do stand-up paddleboarding is after you inflate the stand-up paddleboards, where does the battery have to stay while you're out enjoying your day?
Probably in the car.
Yeah. Now, maybe I'm a little... I think maybe I'm a little weird about my batteries and keeping them room temperature all the time. Like, I don't even leave my MacBook in a car ever. Like, I don't want my MacBook or my phone or any of that stuff in any kind of environment where the batteries get, you know, too hot or too cold. I think I'm scarred from how awful batteries and laptops were in the 2000s. I think that's where this comes from, and never having a laptop with a decent battery. But that for me is a deal breaker alone. Is the fact that I would have to leave the battery in the potentially hot car. But again, I think I'm way paranoid about this.
So this is, and this final kind of conclusion point will make a very nice segue into something else that I want to talk to you about. But essentially, I couldn't find any article or YouTube video that specifically addressed how good is the DeWalt or Ryobi inflator for paddleboards.
Uh-huh.
And specifically, how many paddleboards could I inflate with a 5 amp hour battery?
Because how many do you need to inflate?
I need to be able, for this to be a goer, So I've actually now purchased the pump and the battery from Amazon.
Okay.
So gonna play the consumer card and say, okay, I've bought this, you've got my money, I'm now on a 30-day trial. If it turns out not to do what I want, it's going back.
And this is the Ryobi.
This is the Ryobi. Yep.
Okay. Okay.
I need it to be able to do 3 paddleboards to 25 PSI.
Okay. And here's, I think that if that doesn't work out, I think if it doesn't work out and you have to send it back, the way that I see it is a sealed lead acid battery with a diesel engine behind it that can recharge it as needed is basically limitless capacity in comparison.
Yep.
That said, the batteries, my drill batteries and stuff, like, man, I mean, they eventually run them dead, but I have to use them for a long time before that happens. So I'm interested to find out how it goes.
But what I did find was a YouTube video with a guy talking about, because Ryobi also have 2 inflators at the moment. Anyway, it's all very confusing. But this guy had a YouTube video and he talked about all of the pros and cons of the new inflator from Ryobi versus the old inflator from Ryobi. And then he brought in the DeWalt inflator and was telling us all about the, you know, the things that this one could do. Anyway, so this video answered a whole load of my questions and this has inspired me so that once this has arrived, I'm going to make a YouTube video that specifically answers how good is the Ryobi battery plus inflator for pumping up paddleboards. How long does it take? How many can it do? Let's film it. I'll charge the battery up to full. I'll then attempt to inflate all 3 paddleboards. If it manages to do that, then I'm going to deflate them and then I'm going to go again and we'll see, you know, like, does the inflator get too hot and shut down or does the battery run out of juice? I'm going to completely stress this battery.
Nice.
And we'll see what it can do.
Nice. That sounds like a good review video.
But that also then opens up a nice segue if you don't have any follow-up questions about paddleboarding.
No, I mean, yeah, I was gonna like just kind of get your thoughts on, you know, whether it's an enjoyable sport. You're doing it though, so I think it's kind of an obvious answer. So let's go ahead and plus we managed to talk about paddleboards for a good 30 minutes or so. So yeah, let's move on. Let's do that.
So YouTube as a medium. And I pumped out a video just recently.
Yes, and I watched
it. You did watch it. Thank you so much. I personally think you were the first and only person to watch that video at the moment.
Well, I don't know. When I was done, though, I looked and it had 10 views. So,
Which is weird. Maybe I was just refreshing it constantly in the background.
maybe.
But, all right, so I'll go first and just say that this YouTuber reviewing the inflators kind of opened my eyes to be like, wow, I couldn't find the answers to these questions on the manufacturer's website.
Yes.
So this guy did me a huge favor by explaining he already had bought all 3 units and was able to tell me, and he answered most of my questions. He didn't answer the questions about how good is it for paddleboarding, but that's great because I can now meet that. I can now fill that hole in the internet. And so, Joel, the real question, and, you know, my ego can take a beating here. I, on Saturday, released a YouTube video talking about Google Slides and how to disable the pop-up toolbar. What were your impressions? What did you like about that video? What did you dislike?
Yeah, okay. So, first off, I didn't know that that was a solvable problem. So the problem that your video solved is that when you use Google Slides, which is PowerPoint except in the Google ecosystem, whenever you move your mouse, there's a little pop-up window that shows up that has some controls for the slide deck, which yes, it annoyed me, but it never occurred to me that there was a way to make that go away. Like, I never even thought that there was a way to make that disappear. And the way that you made it disappear is not... How did you even figure that out? Like, what?
Well, I just started Googling... I think this is the thing, though, about... Not just me. I don't think I'm special in this respect. But this bugged me because of what I was doing with Google Slides. It bugged me more than it normally did. And I was like, okay, right, fine. The next 20, 30 minutes, I'm dedicating to solving this problem, and started Googling Google Slides. How do I disable the pop-up toolbar? Because in a live presentation, that pop-up toolbar is annoying. Mm-hmm. In a screen recording, it's unacceptable.
Yeah, agreed. So how deep did you have to dig to find the answer to that?
I don't think it took me too long. I on my blog article, I included a link to the forum post that did lead me on to this, but I think it ties into the kind of larger world of things that you can do with Google Docs, Sheets, and Slides with APIs.
Okay. Oh, so basically, just, is it okay if I spoil the video? And like,
yeah,
well, because you're gonna have to go watch the video anyway to find out exactly how to do it. But basically, you changed the URL.
Yeah, I changed a specific URL parameter.
And that changed the behavior of Google Slides, and so that it no longer shows that stupid, annoying pop-up that happens whenever you move your mouse.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, it, in a weird, ridiculous way, it feels like it's hacking Google Slides, but it's not at all. It's just sort of not, it's not GUI accessible functionality.
Okay, hang on a second. Hang on. We need to clear up a couple things really quickly.
Yeah.
A GUI is?
Go ahead. A graphical user interface.
Buttons, clickable buttons and lists and stuff like
that. Yeah, so when I say GUI, I just, because most of my computer skill,
using
power user, I don't know. It's GUI driven. I'm definitely more comfortable in a GUI.
And that is how the vast majority of that's probably unnecessary to say vast, huh? I could probably just say majority. The majority,
but it sounded pretty epic.
It did. It does make it sound more epic. Yeah, the vast majority of computer users. Typically, yep. they just use a graphical user interface, GUI. I think the first mainstream computer that had a graphical user interface would have been the original Macintosh, I think. Although there are a lot of others that popped up pretty quickly after that. The second way that you mentioned interacting with a computer is through an API. Nick, can you tell us what is an API?
Surely you would be better to tell.
Okay.
Because if I'm scared that I'm going to highlight my ignorance when we discover that Nick actually doesn't really know what he's talking about.
What an API. Well, I don't either. But I'm willing to make a fool out of myself. That's no big deal. So an API is an application programming interface. Is that the correct thing? Oh gosh, I got to.
I think so. Yes, you're having the moment of doubt that I was worried about.
Yep. So API, application programming interface. And so basically, an API gives you the ability to interface with the computer through a means other than clicking on buttons and stuff.
I don't know. Actually, I'm going to jump in. I would say, though, in terms of interacting with your computer, I would say the options are GUI or command line when you're typing things into the terminal. But APIs give you the ability to interact with services.
That's a much better way. I agree. So there's really kind of three ways. There's the graphical user interface, there's a terminal, which is like a command prompt where you just type stuff in. And then there's the API. And so what you did in your YouTube video is you actually found that Google offers an API, and then you basically, by typing something specific into the
URL.
Yeah, into the URL.
Yeah, the address bar.
The address bar. Thank you. Oh my gosh, I could not remember what it was called. You actually interacted with the API and got different behavior out of Google Slides.
But I feel like I should follow up quickly and say, you know, I'm saying the phrase URL parameter as though
everyone knows what that means.
This is just everyone. I didn't really know this was a thing until I tried to solve this problem with Google Slides. I guess the only other scenario that's similar is like with Dropbox, when if you send someone a Dropbox link and you want them to just be able to download the file, you change the zero at the end of that URL to a one.
Yeah,
and then it becomes a direct. Yeah.
It's like question mark. It's like at the end of the address, it's like there's a question mark, and that kind of signifies that we're beginning parameters, right? Like, the link is done. Now we're defining parameters. And then you do DL, which I believe stands for download, equals zero yep. or one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Dropbox, to my knowledge, is the only service that makes this incredibly easy, where I can send you a huge file through Dropbox. And by default, when you click on that link, it's going to take you to Dropbox and give you the opportunity to download it from a web page. But 99% of the time, I'm sending you this file because I want you to download it. So I change that zero to a one, and now I've just given you a link that you click on, and boom, the file starts downloading.
Yeah, super convenient, and that's exactly what I want. So getting back
to your
video, which
is not offered by Google Slides or Apple or
anyone,
or Mega. No one else seems to give me that instant direct download link. Okay, go on.
Yeah. Oh man, I want to go on another tangent so bad, but we're not going to do it. So not talk about that. It's okay. So back to your video. First off, I didn't know that this was a problem that could be solved, and I'm thrilled to have this solution now to get rid of that. Another thing I appreciated about the video is you pretty much got to the point. You did a little bit of talking about, okay, what is the problem that we're trying to solve? Maybe one thing that would be helpful is in the description, a link to the spot in the video where you say how to do it, you know?
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Have you noticed that when you search for something, if you search for like how to fix a problem in your house or something like that, Google will actually pull a list of YouTube videos, and then it will even highlight the important part of the video that actually tells you how to do it. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
I presume that's a load of work I got to do.
Yeah. Well, do you have to do that part? I don't know. Actually, don't know.
I imagine I have to put some sort of chapter into the video, but I think it can all be done in YouTube.
Well, I don't know. I think it might be done automatically. I think Google might do that on their own because, here's my big beef with how-to videos on YouTube. So back when my oldest daughter was pretty young, she was a toddler. We were out playing in front of the house or on a walk or something like that. I don't know. And she was walking, but she's a pretty new little walker. And every now and then toddlers will just like get distracted by literally anything, and their legs will just stop doing anything and just go limp. And so I'm holding onto her hand, and all of a sudden she goes limp and basically falls to the ground, but I'm still holding onto her hand, and I didn't react nearly fast enough. And it caused her arm to straighten out and pull pretty hard, you know?
Okay.
And that actually dislocated her elbow. And it's a very common thing that happens with little kids. It's called nursemaid's elbow, I believe. And so she starts screaming because her elbow is basically dislocated. That's not good. That never feels great.
Sounds horrible.
Have you ever dislocated something? I never have, actually.
I have, yes. I've dislocated my shoulder many times.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We've talked about this. Anyway. So we pick her up and we take her into the house, and I look, and we know that this is something that if you know the trick, you can easily put a kid's elbow back in. Like, this is a well-documented thing. So I get on YouTube and I type in like nursemaid's elbow fix and hit enter. And then, you know, YouTube returns a result, and I click on it, and the guy's like, hello. In this video, we're going to talk about how to put a child's elbow back in place. Now, nursemaid, it was just like, dude, get to the point. How do I fit? My daughter is crying. She's in pain. Just tell me what I need to do. And finally, after like 3 or 4 minutes of screwing around, he finally shows how to do it. And like the actual content of the video was about 10 seconds. It was easily a 6 or 8 minute video. So anyway, that's one of my big beefs with how-tos. Is that they just take forever to get to the point. Yours, you're pretty quick to get to the point. Part of the reason why I think the intro is good is because I didn't even know that this is a fixable problem. I might not have even known that it was a problem. Like, I might have just accepted it at face value that like, yep, there's a little pop-up that happens. And the video kind of had to sell me on the idea of like, hey, this is a problem, but don't worry, you can fix it. So anyway, all that to say, I thought the pacing was good. It would be nice to have a way to jump to the part where you just show exactly how to do it. So, I hope that's constructive and not destructive criticism.
No, it is constructive. I don't know how much this is going to be a thing, but I'm starting, again, it's a laziness thing, but I'm starting to get to this point where like I have blog article topics that I want to put out there, but the idea of trying to describe the scenario in text, in a well-formatted, structured, written in good English way, it's too much effort.
I
could have described that YouTube video in a written blog post article, but I just couldn't be bothered.
It was easier
and far, I think, faster to record a YouTube video to demonstrate it.
I know where you're coming from. In my blog, I have like I have a blog at potatofi.com, and there are probably 30 blogs that are in draft status right now that are half finished in some way or another. Because I'm like, oh, I'm going to blog about this. This is going to be a really good blog. And then I start writing it and I'm like, this is a lot of work.
So, let me ask you a question, Joel.
Sure.
Do you think some of those draft articles you've got on your blog, would they work as a YouTube video?
Yeah.
If you were talking... And okay, so they'd work as a YouTube video. Would they work as a YouTube video with you talking to somebody?
Yeah, I think so. There's several of them. So I'm just scrolling through the list here. Which ones? So like one is like, okay, how to do an L2TP IPsec VPN on a Unify Secure Gateway. That one would probably be better as a blog post because there's probably some commands involved and some very, some specific texts involved. Although there's another one here that this is easily a solid 2 pages, probably a page or 2 pages of text. And it's all about how I get good video quality output from my classic game consoles, like my Super Nintendo and my Nintendo 64.
Right.
And as I started to write this, I realized that in written form, it's so easy to accidentally go down all of these rabbit holes of exactly how all of it works and stuff. You know what I would probably be better is just to point a camera at my face and say, hey, this is the little box that I run everything to convert it from, you know, old analog video over to HDMI. And that would probably be just a way better medium. So I would say it's dependent a little bit on the content itself.
Okay. I'm going to propose something. Would you like to try something new, Joel? How do you feel about being willing to experiment?
I mean, I'm definitely good with that. Using my limited energy, further diluting my limited energy and, taking more attention away from our podcast sounds like a great idea. Yeah, let's definitely do that.
But your example, and I'm building towards something here, but so your example there with the how do you get good video quality, I wonder if there's an opportunity here for us to jump on a video call, record the video, and basically I'm on the call as more or less a silent audience. So rather than you creating a video and going through the entire process of, you know, figuring out what I'm going to say at the beginning, how am I going to introduce the video, and then I'm going to go and then doing all this, like, it would be an experiment just to see what's the format like when you are making a video and you are explaining it and it will become a YouTube video, but you are doing it to a more or less silent audience.
I think that is a very cool idea, and here's why. I'm going to make a parallel with some things that I'm doing at work right now. So my job as a sales engineer is I have to demonstrate our product a lot. You've done lots of that. You know exactly what that's like.
Yeah, sales engineer. I seem to remember something about that. Yeah. I thought I was pretty good at it.
Yeah, in a past life, you were a sales engineer. I'm looking at my blog in the background on my computer right now, and I wrote down original Nintendo, Super Nintendo, and Nintendo 65. There's no such thing as it. It's a Nintendo 64. Anyway, I think that's a great idea, and here's why. When I demonstrate a product to a live audience, to a customer, In an hour, I start talking, I walk them through the product, and in an hour, we're done, right? when I'm recording just myself, so somebody at work actually asked me, like, Joel, we need more of these demonstrations, but we don't have any more of your time right now. And so they said, can you please just record yourself? And we will, if we can't get you live, then we'll just play back the recording. And I'm like, yeah, sure. I spent 3 or 4 hours and I did not produce a usable recording of myself demoing the product. Like, I have done this, you know, probably 100 times yeah. now, relatively new at this particular job. So I've probably demonstrated this particular product around 100 times, and I can do it with my eyes closed in front of a live audience. But as soon as I like turn on the camera, and the other thing that happens too is your, the demand for quality in my own mind goes up. I'm like, okay, since I'm not doing this live over Zoom, I can set up my digital SLR, I can get high quality footage, I can synchronize that with the screen share, do a little bit of editing, and really produce something nice. And that is a dangerous, dangerous trap to fall in, because I spent an entire afternoon on it and did not produce something useful by the end of the afternoon.
Yep, I can relate.
So all that to say that, yeah, I think that's a very interesting idea. And if it's something you want to try, then I'm game. I'm definitely down for that.
Well, Being the rather selfish individual that I am, I also have a Fusion 360 project that I want to do a blog article about, and I want to demonstrate it and talk about it, but trying to describe it all in text and pictures is proving to be a little bit burdensome.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder whether, if I could jump on a call with you, record my screen, have a video link with you, I would request that you were more or less a quiet, not silent, because I do want questions. But I don't know. I guess we'll have to play with it, see whether it works as a conversation piece or it works as me presenting something to you and then you ask questions. I don't know.
Yeah.
It might work. It might work in both ways. But yeah, I really want to show you this Fusion 360 thing, and doing it through pictures and text alone, I think, is less of a good experience than a YouTube video could be.
Yeah, absolutely. So two things. First off, I'm in 100%. And
okay.
Here's why. The majority of what I've learned about Fusion 360 is from you. Like, whether it's a video that you shared with me, you know, so like kind of indirect where you've shared a video with me, or you literally jumping on a Zoom and saying, hey, I got to show you this Fusion 360 thing. and by the way, I think it's hilarious that we managed to sneak Fusion 360 into yet another episode. Maybe we should rename it. And a classic theme of the Hidden Node podcast, maybe we should rename it the Fusion 360 podcast. Huh?
Or Fusion 360 Insider.
Ooh, there you go. Yeah, something like that. Some ridiculous name. Yeah. So yeah, yet another Hidden Node podcast. We managed to check the Fusion 360 box.
Also, if Autodesk wants to sponsor this show,
yeah,
for amateurs talking about a tool that they don't really know how to use, we would be very happy.
Yeah,
to
you know what? A commercial license for Fusion would be fantastic. That would be pretty cool. Yeah,
I feel like maybe just some one-on-one training would. I mean, because I've already got their tool for free.
That's true.
It's incredible.
It's very good. Yeah. Okay, I had point one, but what was point
two? That was point one.
Oh, point two. Okay, the second thing is that, you know, when I demonstrate my company's product to a customer, they're not doing any of the explaining. If they are, why am I giving them a demo? You know?
Hmm.
And so I think that the whole model of you present and I listen and ask and just ask questions, I think is a good model, because we know it works, because we've both used that extensively in day jobs to present products to customers. So yeah, I think it works.
Okay.
The one thing that I would want to avoid is I would not want to make that like podcast material, you know? Like,
yes.
I wouldn't want to like take the audio from that and publish it to, you know, and so it's like, hey, another episode of the Hidden Node podcast. And we got this one for free because we just stole the audio. Here's why. There's a couple of podcasts that I listen to, one in particular where they've started doing a live recording of it. And when they do a live recording of it, they do a little bit of screen sharing and they do video. And so what has started to happen is they say, oh, yeah, like, look at, you know, like they look at eBay auctions a lot. It's one thing they do. It's a podcast about collecting old Macs. And so They have a section where they specifically look at eBay finds. And I find that, I don't really like that section, to be honest, anyway. But now it's even worse because they're like, hey, oh yeah, look at this one right here. Oh yeah, that's a very interesting one. And we don't know the context. We're like, so anyway.
Okay. And but presumably you could go and watch the video version.
Yeah, but
no, I know exactly where you're gonna go. But you're listening to a podcast because you're in an environment where audio only is appropriate. Am I wrong?
Exactly. I'm either, you know, it used to be that it was like on an airplane, so I couldn't stream video or anything like that. Or I'm walking between gates, you know, at an airport, or eating my lunch at an airport, or some environment where just video doesn't make sense. Or I'm driving in my car, or I'm mowing the lawn. Those are the scenarios in which a podcast makes sense. I listen to podcasts because there is no video. Don't get me wrong. I love video. There are several YouTube channels that I follow and love. And I've even got to be involved in a couple of YouTube channels recently, which has been really cool. That's a topic, probably a topic for another day. But
okay.
I don't want video. I don't want to be a second class citizen on the podcast. I want the podcast to be a podcast. I want the video to be a video. I don't want to try to mix the two. As a consumer.
Yeah.
That's where I'm coming from. That's what I meant to say. Yeah.
I completely agree. I don't like audio podcasts, which are like, and so, you know, if you're only listening to the audio stream, then you probably can't see the thing that we're now looking at and like, whoa, isn't this cool? But I will say, interestingly, I listened to a podcast called Tesla Daily.
Okay.
And the presenter of that started as a podcast and has now transitioned to being a YouTube presenter as well. Mm-hmm. And I think he does a very good job of, it is a shared audio, and occasionally there are charts, which, you know, I think that's fair enough. You cannot present a chart through a podcast.
Right.
But he, I feel like Rob Mauer does
Nick, I would beg to differ on the you can't share a chart on the podcast. I actually have a chart here that shows how well you can share charts on podcasts. And as you can see from the blue line that is trending up from the left over to the right, you can actually see that graph at how effective it is. So I'm sorry. That was the dumbest joke of all time. I'm so sorry. Right. I'm so sorry. Anyway, you were saying about the presenter before I so rudely interrupted
you. All I was going to say was I think it can be done, but I think it's a very different skill. And I think in my view at the moment, I would like to keep our content, it's either video or it's a podcast.
Yes. Concur. Wholeheartedly.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Cool.
Well, it sounds like the plans are made.
Let's give that a try.
Then. Yeah. Let's do it. That sounds great. I think we should try it. And we will post... let's see how it goes, and in the next
let's not make any promises because it might turn out to be total garbage.
Yeah,
in which case it won't be getting published.
I was about to say, and in the next one we'll publish a link in the notes about the show notes about how to find it. Yeah, you're right. Okay, if it is successful, we will consider publishing a link. But if it fails, then we'll just talk about why it failed and how it failed. Or we'll just ignore it and just pretend we didn't do it.
Yeah, or we could just pretend. Okay. Well, look, let's try and bring this to a close. But wasn't there something about, didn't we leave, wasn't there an episode that we left on some sort of a cliffhanger?
Oh.
What was it? It was about iPhone usage,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think we were going to talk about.
Can you remember what it was?
Yeah, we were going to talk about applications and like our favorite apps.
Okay.
For iPhone. And we kind of covered that in the live episode.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
We kind of covered it. I think what I need to do is I want to go give that one a listen anyway, because I haven't listened to the whole thing yet. So I think that let's leave that open as potential. We might cover that in a future episode because I need to go back and listen to that episode and see. This big gap in recording, since we kind of got out of, you know, out of recording every other week as the norm, that's made it difficult to maintain continuity. And so you know, that's a good reason to be sure that we do this regularly. And so I think, you know, I'm going to try to focus on getting my energy back up. You know, I've been trying to mountain bike every week. That's been helping a lot. Pedaling up a big hill has made, it makes me feel a lot better. And I will work on my side of that from trying to have more energy so we can kind of get back in the swing, just back into the routine.
Well, it's a two-sided thing as well. Like I there have been a few occasions, you know, when we have lined up to try and record, and then something's been going on for me, and I've been like, oh man, I'm Joel, I haven't got it in me.
I almost canceled on you today, actually, seriously. Yeah, but it ended up working out very narrowly. Like I had a commitment that wrapped up only about 15 minutes before we were supposed to record, and so it actually worked out just fine. Okay. But it was close that it didn't. So anyway, I'm gonna prioritize getting back on the phone.
Okay.
Because you know what, Nick, I enjoy these conversations, and when we do it and we edit and we post it, that does give me energy. I think the trick is making sure that we follow through on it and get it done.
Yeah, agreed.
So
perfect, Joel. It's been really good speaking with you again in the scenario of recording.
Yes,
and really good to catch up. Let's try and do this again soon.
Oh, like there is no try. Know, yeah. There is only do.
Oh yeah, that's right. There is no try.
Let's,
you're right.
Yeah, let's do this again. Yeah, Nick, this is fantastic. I've missed this. I've missed it so much. So thank you for getting back on the phone,
me
man.
Too,
this
man.
is fantastic. Let's do it again very, very soon.